Okay, now if people do want to go on mute, you would do *6. And what that will do is you will be able to hear everything that is being said, but we won't hear your clock chiming or your dog barking or whatever. When you wish to speak, then you will have to unmute, which will be *6 again. And then if you say your name, Shelley Koppel is our moderator this afternoon, and she'll recognize you, and you'll be able to ask your question or make your comment or speak. All right? So that's how we'll do it. And when you're finished with that, you would go back to *6. That will help everybody be able to hear everyone else. So we appreciate that if everyone does *6 to be muted. And we'll be able to hear Shelley and hear each other. And then when you wish to speak, you would just unmute again with *6. Okay, I hope that's clear. So, Shelley, I think you could probably start and make your remarks, and we'll go. Just one thing, our next call is going to be April 13th, which is, I believe, a Wednesday. At the same time, the same numbers. Our moderator will be Tom Anderson, who is now living in Kansas, and he's going to talk about church going and how we can make that a pleasant experience for ourselves and others who may feel uncomfortable about our vision loss, and it's new to us and new to them. So he will be talking about socialization in churches and other areas, but mainly in the church, because there are many people that have questions in that arena. So that'll be our next call on April 13th.
Very good. Joanne from Georgia.
Okay.
Denise
from
Minnesota.
Wonderful. Okay, if you ladies would like to go on *6 and mute, then you can hear the conversation. And if you have comments or remarks you would like to make, then you press *6 again, and then you'll be able to speak, and Shelley will recognize you. That'll keep everybody so we can hear each other.
All righty.
Okay,
Mabel, South Carolina, Sumter Chapter.
Good, Mabel. Wonderful.
All right,
getting
Mabel,
people
nice.
From all over the country.
Hi.
Good.
Hi. Very good. How fun. This is like a reunion every time we do it. It's great.
Yes.
So I should get going? Or?
Yes, why don't
okay.
you? Sure. I think it's about 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm.
All righty. Well, welcome, everyone. This is our first conference call for, and it's March 17th of 2016, and I'll just say that for the record. It's our first senior division call, and we're very pleased to have everyone. Our topic today is losing vision and adapting to life's changes. And again, if we do the *6, then that way we can all hear each other. And when you want to speak, just do *6, and that will take you out of mute. And you can announce your name, and then I will recognize you. And then put back on the *6 at the end of your comment, and that way we can hear everything again.
Pat Walt off Columbia, South Carolina.
Very good. Okay.
You want me to hit *6 right now?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Hi. And I want to welcome the senior division, seniors at charge at the Colorado Center. I think it's cool that a whole group of people are sitting together and listening to this. So I thought that was a really neat deal. So what I thought I would start with today is my own story of my own vision loss. I was at a much younger age. However, I think the things that I went through are probably similar to what anybody experiences when they lose vision. And we will apply this to seniors and life for seniors at, you know, kind of at the end of my little story. And I will take a break at the end of my story so that people can ask questions if they want to. And if you do have a question anytime, just say your name and I will try and recognize you because I don't want this to be a monologue. Okay, I ended up being born with an eye condition from retinal damage at birth. They call it now retinopathy of prematurity. It was RLF back when I was born. And my vision was very nearsighted when I was younger. I went to public school and could see print and this. It was difficult. You know, I wasn't a fast reader of print materials, but I definitely did fine. I, you know, did well in school. I always sat close to the front of the classroom to see the blackboard and this kind of thing. But at the age of 14, my vision took quite a different change. It was pretty much an overnight situation. I apologize for any coughing, too. I've had some sinus things going on. And so after about a week's observation with my ophthalmologist in this, they determined that I'd lost the vision in my right eye completely. It was the weaker eye of either one of my eyes. And I'd acquired glaucoma and cataracts, and I was 14 years old. Excuse me. So, you know, I mean, I still had pretty usable vision and didn't seem like the changes were going to be all that drastic at the beginning. But as time went on, I wasn't allowed to read print material for a while because they didn't want my retina to detach and didn't know if that would, the strain of that would cause that problem. And so I graduated from writing with a pencil to writing with a pen to writing with a flare pen. Oh, wow, I apologize. To eventually going to wide line paper and using pretty dark print. Just a moment, please. Which would have been using markers and flare pens and all those sorts of things. Now, I graduated high school, and I was found out about through the Commission for the Blind as a consumer in the late 60s, I think through the Library of Congress, honestly, because I had started getting recorded books. And it was, I was, the Commission for the Blind got a hold of my name. They were just getting started in the state of Idaho, which is where I was born. And so I was asked to go to their training center at the end of high school. And, of course, at that time, I'd already applied to college, and I was very much in a visual mode. I didn't consider myself blind. I didn't see well, but, you know, that wasn't the worst thing. I mean, I still thought I'd get around and do things that I pretty much had done all my life. Some things like riding a bike I hadn't been able to do for a few years because depth perception had changed so much. So I went to the commission, and a lot of the things they taught me, I thought, honestly, for, you know, what good is this? I mean, I'm, you know, they put blindfolds on me because they said it would make it easier for me to learn these new skills. And I met some wonderful blind people, some that were totally blind, and I thought, well, at least I'm not one of them. And some people that had degrees, varying degrees of low vision. And I thought, well, I can, you know, I'm doing okay. I can see a little better than some of them and whatever. And this was just my mindset because I had never been thought of as a blind person. And the longer time went on there, the first summer I only went for about 6 weeks. The next summer I went for a full summer of 3 months of training. And I was introduced to the National Federation of the Blind during those years, those early times. And some of the instructors were members of the NFB and got me started with joining a chapter. And in 1972, I went to my first convention, and it was pretty fun. I mean, it was a lot of just lots of people. I was a people person. I loved it. I found a group of people I could kind of relate to, you know, that had some vision loss and some totally blind. But, you know, it was kind of a hierarchy thing in my mind that, you know, I was struggling to figure all this out. And as time went on, it was proposed to me the idea of having an eye surgery. The thought of this was that they could remove this cataract in my good eye, save some vision, and life would go on, and it would be, I'd be in much better shape, visually speaking. And I was a music major, so I thought, wow, this will be great. I can read music again, and I can just kind of do all the things I've really wanted to do. And that pretty well changed my whole life. It changed everything. I went into surgery in the summer of 1974. The next day I woke up and my eyes were bandaged and couldn't see anything. And, you know, it was kind of a process of healing and this kind of thing. There was not much discomfort per se, but about 4 days later they did a second surgery for glaucoma, and that added to the healing process. So I went home, and about a couple weeks later I went to my ophthalmologist closer to my hometown. And I was just asking questions. I was 22 at this point, and I said, so when will I be able to see again? How soon will it really take for all the surgery stuff to heal and I'll be able to be on my way? And he kind of looked at me, and he said, my mom told me he got kind of tears in his eyes, and he said, well, I don't know if you really ever will see again or not. And that was the first recollection I had of the fact of, boy, things have gone south in a hurry. It was just like somebody smacked me with a brick. I did not expect that in the least. And I thought, good grief. You know, I'd used a couple of large print books in high school, and they were pretty awkward, and had some large print books at the beginning of college, and there's a lot to drag around, and I'd use my cane occasionally and stuff, but I pretty well hid it in the corner in my closet at school, college, or anywhere, and people in my hometown certainly weren't used to me using one. And as far as Braille, well, yeah, I could write with a slate and stylus, which was pretty phenomenal, seeing how I could hardly read Braille, and hadn't really used a lot of it in the last 3 or 4 years since I'd started learning it, because frankly it just wasn't going to apply to me. And so I sit there at home that month or so after the surgery, and I thought, my goodness, what in the world am I going to do? I've worked very hard to hide this visual loss my whole life, and especially these last few years. I don't know what I'm going to do. How are people going to relate to me? Am I going to have any friends when I go back? Are the professors going to look at me and think I'm just this oddball, and all these kinds of things? And it was all about appearances and all about, boy, I don't know how I can use a cane on campus. I hadn't done it so far, other than maybe late at night in the very, very dark of night crossing the campus to go to the music building to practice. I mean, really, you know, I'd show up for an appointment early so the person could find me. I mean, I didn't have a problem. So anyway, this changed things pretty drastically. And what I realized through that process was I learned all these things from these wonderful people at the Commission for the Blind, and they'd mentored me, and I'd learned about the National Federation of the Blind and its philosophy, and about doing things for yourself and having independence and learning to advocate for yourself and learning to be happy with who you were, and for heaven's sakes, you weren't ill in other ways, you know, and you could learn a few things, and life was really would go along pretty well. And so I thought, I better just pick all this up and start putting it in my suitcase of things to use in life, because I really was dependent now on using a cane, and I certainly had the feeling of I was not going to be different. I was bound and determined. I wasn't going to sit at home in my small town and expect my parents to take care of me, and they were pretty devastated as well. And friends and family, a lot of them, you know, just really were sympathetic, but they didn't know how to empathize with what I was really going through. And so I went back to college, and lo and behold, friends were still friends, and professors I still had a brain, and they still, you know, treated me like I was one of the students, and went on and did some student teaching and some various things, and went on to graduate school, and lo and behold, some friends from the National Federation for the Blind helped do some, again, mentoring of me, and, you know, maybe this is you need to consider a different direction, and so I did, and I did some moving to go to college, and some more moving to have jobs and a career. And it was just like, wow, I guess this is really possible, you know. It just really was huge to me that I had connections previously to losing my vision, and I maintained some of those connections to be able to go on with life and do the things that I wanted to be able to do. And yes, I was younger, and sometimes you have kind of, there's I can't think of the phrase I want, but you're fearless because you really, you know, something new is exciting and fun, and you don't think of the obstacles in your way. You're looking for a challenge, and you're ready to do something new and different, and I just embraced life at that point. And I know that vision loss is a dramatic thing in a person's life, and you can sit and spin your wheels, but we can also pick up and continue on with where we are. And I think at that point I will stop, and if anybody has any things they would like to say, we can continue on in a minute, but I want to give people a chance to talk about maybe something that's on your mind. And just feel free.
Okay,
to
so talk. If you want to talk to Shelly, press *6 so you'll unmute yourself, and then you'll be able to speak.
Yeah, I won't hear you otherwise.
Right. So.
Well.
And Toro.
Yes.
You know, you were young when you lost some of your vision, or most of your vision. But for those of us who lose it, when I was 63 when I lost, my middle vision to retinal macular degeneration, myopic macular degeneration. And for us who lose it as adults, it isn't so easy. I mean, not that it was easy for you also, but it's tremendously traumatic, tremendously. Most of us go into severe depression.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. I totally understand. I really do. And I my comment on that would be probably seek your friendships, pastors you may know, friends who have a strong listening ear. It is hard, and it's hard to maintain the relationships you want, but have the people you feel like you're maybe wearing your emotions on your shirt sleeve, and it's a grief. It's a type of grief to lose your sight, and you have to allow yourself time to grieve and talk about things. Just like I would say it's a lot like going through the grieving process if you've lost a spouse or close friend or family member. And the depression, I don't know. Ruth, do you have any thoughts?
Well, yeah, I think that what you're doing right now is a really good thing. That's why we're networking right now and talking and having these calls, is because we are everywhere. We're all around the country. It happens to many, many seniors. The National Federation of the Blind is a consumer-based organization. It's in every state, and it is a good first outreach place to meet people who are positive, who will listen to you, who will embrace you where you are with your vision loss, and give you some suggestions and tools and things that may be helpful to you. And it could be little things like, you know, how do you mark your appliances, or how do you pour your coffee, or how do you eat out and feel comfortable. And some of that is meeting other people who are like yourself, seniors, and learning from each other. And that's challenging because we are separated by many miles many times. There are many people that live in rural areas. But Connecticut is a small state, for example, so there's an advantage if someone is from an area where they can meet other people in other chapters of the Federation. But reaching out in that way is a good first step. Certainly locally, if you have people in your area who may be professionals who can help you, because I think sometimes we do need professional assistance with the grief. Where do we start when it's so overpowering, you know? And sometimes, even though those of us who have worked in the field of working with seniors with vision loss, if the depression is really significant and severe, you're not ready to hear and listen to see what we have to say even. So the depression is a very significant process. But as there is a time to grieve, at some point there is a time to, you know, to put your feet on the ground and say, I have life too. I want to live. And hopefully getting to that point where you will begin to look and say, I am me, I have my abilities, I am the same person I was. I may have to learn how to use some different tools and techniques, but I can learn and I can challenge myself to meet new people and have new situations.
Well, Ruth, it's been 10 years, so I've gotten over that part of it.
Uh-huh.
But I did want to bring up about the depression that happened, you know, in the very beginning.
The beginning,
I'm beyond that now. But,
that's good, And I think that's what I'm saying is I think it's a normal and, you know, response. I think it happens to everybody, and it's an unfortunate, severe experience to go through. But I'm glad that you're on the other side now. So, you know, hopefully we can help you connect with other people and you can learn from other people and give what you've learned, because you've already been there and done it. So you have some things to share with others who are not as comfortable with who they are as you can be with yourself. So that's the other advantage. You can give back to other people as well.
Michelle,
yeah, I have. I run a low vision support group. So, and I belong to the NFB. So
good, good. Well, that's a good yes.
I will move now.
Okay,
Michelle.
Yes, thank you for that. I just got a little overwhelmed there for a second, and I thought, wow, there's so many ways you could do this. But depression is very difficult, and if you have even family members, grandchildren, if you're not so great on the computer, get your grandchildren, that can look online, and sometimes that's how you can connect with other groups in your state where they might be from, who the people are that are named as officers in that organization. Another place that's a really good place would be even your senior centers. They deal with your area area offices on aging. Oftentimes, now they're not going to know so much about the philosophy of, you know, the National Federation of the Blind say, but you probably would find someone who can direct you to maybe people that they know of that have gone through this very same thing. They also could tell you about services, support groups, things like this. There might be professionals in your area that they could connect you up with. Friends at your church might know some things. And this network of people that you've always in your life been involved with through your community, somebody in that group of your friends, through your church, through your profession, you know, like civic groups that you've been involved with. A lot of times the Lions Clubs are really awesome about this. They oftentimes are familiar enough with some places that are where you can get connected up with people who have vision loss or have some ideas of how you can get your feet back on the ground. Through the National Federation of the Blind, we, of course, have our chapters and our national organization and oftentimes support groups. The philosophy is huge, and that's where we learn our skills. And it is something simple sometimes as putting a sticky dot on a on button on the microwave, and bingo, you've got you could use scotch tape if you don't know how to go about things. You can, there's wide line paper, dark line paper. There are pens that you can get that write a real wide dark line. And some of these things, I will give a website at the end of the talk. I can do it any time if anybody has to leave early from the conference call. But the National Federation of the Blind has a aids and appliance independent market, we call it. And that's a really good resource for finding adaptive tools to use for low vision or vision impairment. That's where you can learn your get Braille and slates and styluses and means for being able to write Braille, or recorders or dots or watches or timers, a little clock that speaks, a lot of different things. And I'll just go ahead and say the website. It's nfb.org. And through that, you can find out the independent market and come up with a lot of different tools to be able to use. You can also get literature. And like I was saying, you can have somebody go online, and there's all kinds of calendars of events. We have our senior website for the seniors.nfb.org. Is that correct? I think
yes.
That's the website,
yes.
seniors.nfb.org, and that's a really good resource. These conference calls, there's been several of them already happen, and they are all recorded for use, and they're on all different kinds of topics, on mobility, on organization, on labeling, traveling, and that could be not only just getting from your house to the post office or the grocery store, but it could be traveling as in the sense of going to a different town, going to different locations in your city, or flying, or any things like that. There are a myriad of different resources available online about the NFB and how to connect in with those things. Again, it's a choice to get involved in things. One of the big things, I think, is to keep control of the situation. Depression, after you've gone through that early stage and you kind of decide through talking to friends and friends supporting you, figuring out that, yes, things are going to continue on, being in control of your own situation is huge. You are still the person, like Ruth said, that you always have been. And keeping decision-making in your own hands is important. Sometimes we have a need to move to a town where our family are closer by that can help us out with things. Maybe we've lost, in the process of losing our vision, we've lost through death a spouse or a significant person in our lives, and we've got to be able to regroup on that note, not only losing this person that might have done reading for us or might have been our transportation, might have helped us out with a lot of things. So now we've got to regroup on those kinds of things. Maybe moving to a senior living setting where you're with another group of people that will give you the social interactions you want, but it's a change. That is all life's changes. And figuring out how to plug ourselves back into all the civic things we want to do, or just within like a senior living center. How do we get involved in those kinds of things? And I think it's partly just being vocal. And when you get in a happier situation in your own heart and can say, yes, I'm ready to get back into the throes of life, that's when we can say, okay, then I can start making some plans, and I want to be able to keep up with control of my own situation.
Enter in the search combo box, search few items, same search combo box.
Okay, the person using the computer, if you'd go on star 6, you could mute that so we wouldn't hear it. That would be appreciated. Is there others who might have some questions or just comments? You want to share some of your techniques and things you've learned as you've lost vision and are working with other people or being with other people in your area?
This is Mabel, South Carolina, with the Sumter chapter. Yes. I was just wondering, as we have a counselor that we can go to, let's say I've just lost my sight, and they come out to my house, is it possible that they could bring someone else along that is in the same situation? I mean, even though that counselor knows and have information, but she still doesn't really know what it's like to walk in those shoes. I don't think so.
Right. I think you certainly could ask that, or that you would like to network with people. Sometimes there is something called confidentiality. So technically the counselors are not supposed to, you know, share who's a client and who isn't. However, you can say to them, I would like to meet someone who's in my situation. I will be happy if they call me. So that way you're giving the counselor permission to give your contact information out to someone else. And therefore, they could share that with someone else. So they will sometimes do that.
Okay.
And then maybe
and that way you can,
Set up a time to meet or meet at a restaurant or maybe there's a family member that could bring the two of you together or public transportation or something like that. That that is certainly a good question because here in our state of South Carolina, things are rural and a lot of states have those situations, you know, and when you can't drive, you can't just pick up and go somewhere. So,
Rita Lynch.
Yes.
Evelyn Hairston afterwards.
Okay.
This is Rita, and I'm from Missouri, and I just recently retired as a rehabilitation teacher. And I've worked in that job a lot of years. I am totally blind now, but I lost my sight gradually also. And, yes, I worked with a couple sighted teachers, but I know that sometimes when I went out and met with a newly blind person, whether they were, you know, a senior citizen, and they go, wow, you know, if you can do all this, then and I can see better than you, then that gives me hope that I can do it too. And I showed them a lot of, like you said, how to mark your appliances, how to, you know, cook and how to clean and how to do all this. I just tell them, you know, use your other senses, your sense of touch, your sense of smell, your sense of hearing, and just don't give up because it's not very much fun just to sit and kind of feel sorry for yourself. So, yes, I think that, you know, some of my sighted coworkers, they would say, well, you just don't know because, you know, you're not in our shoes. And they say, you're right, but I know these people who are, I work with them, and you know, my district supervisor is totally blind, and these other people are, and you know, I can understand why they would say that because they think that they don't know, but a lot of the times the teachers, well, they should be trained, and as a matter of fact, as an for new teachers, my supervisor would tell me, okay, you go out to this place and you all do a cooking lesson under sleep shades, you know, where they can learn how to do things without sight as well, like cooking and even sewing thread needles and just all kinds of things like that. And and like I said, I'm just recently retired, so this is my first time that I could actually participate in this, and I appreciate it. And if there's any questions, I'm also be happy to help.
Good. I appreciate your help. That's great. That's great.
Miss Shelley.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is Pat Walthoff from your state of Columbia, South Carolina.
Yes.
From Chicago. And I think this is a good thing. And I think part of the answer is having seminars like either this, either a phone seminar like this one is, a phone conference seminar, or a seminar where we might go over to someone's house and start cooking, start learning to cook. And I just think this is fabulous, and I'm really glad it's going on.
Well, good. Thank
and
you.
Recently I discovered, I'll be quiet in a second, but I discovered, well, not recently, actually, I've been doing this for about 20 years, actually. I don't know why I said recently. When I'm cooking fried eggs, I don't flip them to get them done on the other side. I use what's called a steam lid. A company called Tefal makes pots and pans with is one of the companies I know that has, you know, frying pans and pans with lids, but they have a steam vent in them.
Okay.
And when I put the lid on my eggs, I leave the vent open. And for whatever reason, I don't understand it, I never will, but something, maybe it's the steam coming out of that open vent, cooks my eggs.
Sure.
Now,
sure.
I time them. I have to time them because I like them well done. So for me, you know, two eggs takes at least 5 to 7 minutes. But I don't, and then I take the lid off and put my spatula under it and make sure, you know, that it's on the spatula and put it into a plate. But my eggs are cooked, and I don't need to turn them.
Very nice.
It doesn't work with well as with, say, hamburgers. It doesn't work with well as well.
Right, right.
But
okay.
Honest, it works honest.
Okay. Well, appreciate that.
I think Everly was next, I think.
Okay.
Everly Hairston, did you?
Miss Everly?
I thought I heard two people the last time trying to get the floor, so.
Right.
Okay,
go
maybe
ahead and
not.
Jump
well,
in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyone else have comments or like to share things they do?
Hey, this is Wayne Marshall from the Colorado Center.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with a lot of what we've heard here today, and our group is listening in, and you guys have hit on some of the topics that we've discussed in our group.
Mm-hmm.
But I think an important thing of getting connected is getting connected in a positive way, with positive people. And, you know, I think that's one thing that we promote here at the center is being positive. And everyone can be positive, but that has to happen in your own time. And as you gain confidence, I believe that come about. You know, we have a program here that's maybe not in every state, but our Seniors in Charge program that help you understand what your capabilities are rather than what they're not. And I think once we start thinking about that and accentuating the positive and not the negative, that will help with that depression and realize that you are capable of doing things that you did. Maybe differently, but you can still do those things. And so our program, you know, focuses on the four areas, just like our centers with Braille and cane travel and technology and home management. And so you start to gain confidence in those areas that some of you guys have participated in that. And Shelley worked here at the center, and she understands what that transition is like for a lot of people. But we even here have a we were talking about counseling. We have a counselor through the county mental health services. She's blind. She's a blind counselor. So certainly she can relate and understand what a lot of people are experiencing. So that may be a possibility for someone. You could ask, is there a blind counselor? Is there a counselor who worked and dealt with blind people?
Mm-hmm.
And that may be helpful to you guys. I'm not sure. But many of our people that have come here to the center and live here in the area have worked with this individual. And so I just think that we have to use all the resources that are available to us. It's just a matter of wanting to be connected, wanting to be independent, and wanting to get out. And that takes time. And I think everybody here realizes that takes time, and it's a process. So don't feel bad that you're not where everyone else is, but just keep plugging away, and you will be. You can be.
Thank you. Yep, that's it in a nutshell. That's good. I was just thinking through the library services. Now, many times people will find out about a service like the Talking Book Service, and those are good resources as well. If you live in a town or can research that, Google it or whatever, Talking Book Services is a real good way to not only get books that, and sometimes movies that you can listen to that will help occupy the hours of a day through reading and listening to, we call listening to books the same as reading books. That's what we're doing is reading. And they are a very good resource, and oftentimes they do know also of people from the Commissions for the Blind or State Services for the Blind, mm-hmm. and can help connect you up with somehow some people that way as well. And sometimes people know about the library sooner than they know about rehabilitation services. Or you mm-hmm. might know about Newsline. I don't know. For somebody brand new, that's probably not something you would get maybe as quickly. But for those who do hear about Newsline, it's a way to read the newspaper through the telephone. And, the Talking Book Libraries are the ones a lot of times that know about that as well. At least in South Carolina they do. And a lot of the information from agencies for the blind is put on a newsletter through Talking Book Services. So those are other resources that people can utilize to find out who it would be that you would contact to maybe find out about people to talk to or services you might be thinking of. And here in South Carolina, we conduct a senior camp twice a year. We have a camp that the NFB of South Carolina owns, and we are able to put on a senior camp twice a year, which is a lot social, but we do also capitalize on the positive and what people can do. And we talk about services, and we also talk about the National Federation of the Blind and our positive attitude, and try and hook people up with someone that can really give you some concrete information as to how to do things in your life. So that was another idea that I had, was the Talking Book Services.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Michael Massey, folks.
Sure.
Hi, and I'm in Pueblo, Colorado. I forgot to say earlier, I just wanted to let people know that, unlike Shelley, I'm a patient who had retinopathy of prematurity. I used to saying that. And so I had no vision, I guess, pretty much most of my life. I've been told since I was about 3 months premature or 2 months premature that I had vision, but who knows. But I haven't been blind since birth, and I really don't have any technique to provide. But I just was thinking of Shelley saying that she had vision after her retinopathy of prematurity, but I did not, and I just want to let people know that. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yes. There's all differing degrees and whatnot of vision loss, that's for sure. And mm-hmm. a lot of people never were able to see much, and other people, you know. And that's the thing that I went through. You always think, too, if I could just see a little bit, I could do so much better. Be more perfect at everything. I could do what I want to do. I'd do it more accurately. It would take a lot less time and these kinds of things. And yet, that's not necessarily the case. Sighted people have a lot of deficits too. And it, like Wayne said, it's the process of getting things done and learning to be more confident, which speeds you up. And everybody has to start at a beginning point. And sightedness doesn't mean perfectness. And that's just something, as we work through the different stages of our acceptance of things, it isn't how much sight we've got that really makes us the better person. It's the working through it and the challenge of it and coming out at the other side going, yes, I did it. I did it. And the more I do it, the faster I'll get, and the faster I get, the better I'll get, and these kinds of things. And just having that positive feeling about yourself.
Mm-hmm. I would suggest, though, if people are looking to network with people also, like I said, each state has an affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind, and it lists on the NFB webpage, it does list the presidents, so you have a contact person. And tell that, you know, contact that president and say, I live wherever I live, and I would really like, and tell them what you would like, what your needs are. They would be the first probably person to know people in that state, and know if there's a person that is, you know, similar to your situation or whatever it is you'd like to have, that they could maybe find you a person to, you know, contact either by phone or by internet or however, to get to know other people. So that would be, I think, a very good way to network with other people. Especially if you have special needs or other circumstances besides the vision loss that are important to you, or other hobbies that you like to do, or whatever your interests are, or if you are from a different cultural background, that also, because actually seniors are the fastest growing population of people losing vision in the country, and we often as seniors have other issues besides vision loss as well as we age. And we are from every background and culture, and so there's a lot of diversity, in other words, as well.
Rita Lynch.
Yes, Rita.
Once again, I just want to share an experience. Recently, I was called, and I was asked, you know, about by someone who felt like they were going to be traveling, and they said, so, you know, I have to travel alone. I have to go on a plane, and I'm very nervous about this. And can you do that? And I said, well, yes, I have flown myself before, and happens not to use a cane at this time, but I explained to her how important it was. I do use a cane, of course, and I explained to her, you know, yes, you can, and yes, you can get help, to feel more comfortable. Someone there will help you, so you don't need to not appreciate and do those kinds of things. They'll help and make sure you get to the gate and all that, and get on board and that type of thing. So we just have to not be afraid to ask questions, because that's something that people who might have traveled in the past and now they've lost their vision and they don't think they can do it, especially mm-hmm. alone. But you can, and there is help available.
Mm-hmm. Ah, thank you. You reminded me of something I had on my mind earlier, and that is that we do have to remember that asking questions is the best way for us to get information. and sometimes we're not encouraged to do that in other circles of life. But when we lose our vision, that is huge. And also, if you're, say, a shopper or, I don't know, I'm thinking of using your hands to feel things. You can ask questions to find out something, and oftentimes if you've had, well, you get a picture in your mind of what something is like, but to feel it, there's nothing like for somebody that can't see something to be able to feel either a replica of something or the actual item or a fragment of, say, material or something, and to feel comfortable with that. And oftentimes we're told, don't touch, it's fragile or it's whatever. But with just kind of some guidance from other people, like, say, in a store, or if you're traveling, like she said, with people, and they can, you know, help you pick up something and feel it, that is, those things are totally acceptable. And they're very much our way of knowing what's going on around us and that. So.
Ms. Shelley?
Mm-hmm.
Pat Lockoff?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That reminded me of an experience quickly, and that is that when I first got out of the School for the Blind in Jacksonville, Illinois, I had never been into a store where I touched anything. And the thought of touching things in the store, my first thoughts were, oh, my God, they're going to think I'm going to steal it. They'll call the police, blah, 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 blah. But that is not so. That is just not so. People aren't thinking that. And, you know, people who have been around blind people of any kind know that to get a better picture of something in your mind, you've got to touch things. You've just got to. Especially if you're going to buy it or thinking of buying it or buying it for, you know, someone else other than yourself. It's just so much better, as you said, you know, to touch it, and then you have a complete picture, and as you're touching it, you can ask questions. But it is not true that someone is thinking that you're going to steal the other cameras everywhere, but that's for people who are stealing.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry about
agree.
Anything like that.
I agree, yeah.
No,
okay.
Don't worry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, have we really, I just going back to the topic, losing vision and adapting to life's changes. Have we covered a significant amount of the kinds of things people want to with the idea that of life's changes through your vision issues? It's about 10 more minutes. We don't have to cut off right at top of the hour, but I just wanted to check and make sure that everybody's got had their say and questions answered.
This is Mary Songson.
Yes.
Shelley.
Yes.
Shelley, I just wanted to mention, I've lived here in Spartanburg for about 25 years,
mm-hmm.
and I taught at the school for the deaf and blind for 22 years. I have met many, many sighted and blind individuals here in the community, and it's been a few years now. There's a group of us as blind individuals. We'll get together and talk about how we can help the community, and we've taken on certain projects that we feel would be a positive and significant impact on other newly blinded individuals. And there's a group of us who are willing to be contacted by their home phone if someone would like to talk with another blind individual. So if any of you run into somebody who would like to talk to a blind individual, even though they live here in the Spartanburg area, give me a call, and I'll be glad to help you with individual names and phone numbers.
Okay. I appreciate that, Mary.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that's true for any, like we mentioned, the people that are listed on the website,
mm-hmm.
that are state presidents and just people in general. We most certainly don't mind being called at home for any reason by anybody across the country just to be able to talk if there's that need as well. And I thank Mary for that. But there's many of us that really would love to share and impart confidence and a listening ear to someone who is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely do not want people to just sit and struggle and be more depressed and lose hope completely. We definitely do not want that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's state, a lot of times there's senior groups that do go on within the state. There's conventions in the states that will have breakout sessions in different of different topics. And then there's always our national convention, which Ruth alluded to earlier, and that is a wonderful experience to go and to meet other people that from across the country that all walks of life and have definitely experienced what you might be going through or mm-hmm. someone you know might be.
You are so right, Shelley. You are so right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I would just also want to tell people is with reading things, especially if you're using the services like your medical team, your lawyers, and your bank and so forth, you have the right to ask and make certain that you understand documents, you know, before you're signing them so you know what they are. If that means that someone has to read you information, they do need to help you and assist you in that way because that's important that you know what you're signing, you know what the documentations are, and you understand your responsibilities, whether it's legal documents or your health issues or any other issues like that. So don't feel that you can't ask for, you know, sometimes they might fuss at you a little bit and say, well, we don't have staff to do that. Well, they can have staff to do that. You know, not everybody asks it, but you have, you know, certain rights that you certainly can ask. Or you can say, make arrangements, I'll come back if I, you know, but whatever you need to do. But you certainly want to know documentations that are important to you, what's in those documents, you know, and you do have the right to know. And if it's, you know, especially it's personal affairs, it should be the professionals there who are assisting you, not, you know, that you have to take it home and have a neighbor read it to you. You may choose to do that. If that's your choice, that's your choice. But if it's not your choice, it doesn't have to be your choice. So being proactive and also making certain that you know the paperwork that you have and what needs to be done and how you want it done, that you're in charge of your personal affairs. You do not have to give your personal affairs turned over to somebody else unless you choose to. That's then a choice.
Another thing I've actually, on that note, I've actually had, I've had some dealings with Social Security, and one of the options was, do you want to receive a phone call about this paperwork we're going to be sending you? And I asked them yes to call me, and I still to this day, there's certain paperwork that I get, and they just call me and read it to me. And so, yes, that is totally correct.
I wonder if it's under the ADA. Have to read it to you, because if it is, you know, and if they get kind of snarfy, you can say, well.
Well, I'll look that up because I think that's a good question.
Well,
yes.
Thank you. Please tell us.
I will. Yes.
And you can use that, you know.
That's right.
Right. Right.
This has been great.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have any comments or questions or just something you want to share or talk about before we conclude? We're here for that.
I would like to know how many people were either listening or participated. How many people are here?
That I won't know until afterwards.
Yes,
yeah, we won't know that exactly. Yes.
Uh-huh.
I will remind people, though, however, this call is being recorded, and so it will go on our website, which is seniors@nfb.org, and you have you can turn it into an MP3 file, or you can just list, you know, go down the list of calls and press enter, and after about 15 or 20 seconds it'll start playing on your computer. Or if you don't have the computer, there is a callback number which is slightly different from this one, and the callback number to listen to this call on your phone is 712-432-1202. Then you use the same access code that you used, 759-633-pound. Then they'll ask you for a number, which is a reference number, and they vary. I think this one should be either 15 or 16, because that's how many other calls we have on there. They started at 1, and we had a little difficulty with the first one, so really the first one ended up being 2 and so forth. So we've missed a few numbers, but not very many. So I think this would, the reference number would be 15, and then you would be able to listen to the call.
Thanks for that information.
Yes. So anytime, too. So it's there 24/7. And we hoped that people would want to do that. We're delighted that Wayne's group is listening in, but we thought that other groups might be interested in using some of the conversations to either start support groups for seniors or have them as discussion topics in the group that you have, whatever it might be, or just to share with family and friends that have an interest.
That's very true. Yeah.
This is Art Norm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I just want to introduce myself. This is my first time here.
Okay,
and I just want to say hello, not be a total worker, and let you know that I will be getting more involved, that I just started heading up a committee for the senior citizens in the LA San Fernando Valley chapter, and I plan on being more active.
Good for you.
Very good. Awesome. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Everybody still there? Okay.
Pat Wolkoff is about to leave. Thanks, everybody.
It's fine.
You're very welcome. Yes.
Bye.
Well, this has been awesome.
I would say thank you, everyone who participated. And those that you were here, you participated by listening. So if it's your first time, I know some of you it was, so we're delighted to have you. We hope you'll join us. Our next call will be April 13th at the same time, same numbers, and it will be moderated by Tom Anderson, and the topic will be on church going and socialization with others. So we hope to see you back and tell your friends and other people that you might have an interest in that call about these conference calls. I want to thank you, Shelley, for being our moderator.
You're welcome.
And we will see everyone next time, which will be the 13th of April. So have
All
a good evening, everyone. Be safe. Have a wonderful weekend. Have a wonderful holiday season. And we hope to see you in April.
All righty. Thank you all for coming. Bye.
Thank you.